The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Maytag laundry appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your home's unique needs and style. Shop Maytag 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows how to help you save this 4th of July. Upgrade your laundry routine with the new and exclusive first-of-its-kind all-in-one vented laundry combo. Wash and dry in just 68 minutes. Save up to 40% on select major appliances. Plus, when you buy more, you save more. Shop Samsung this July 4th at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
Another week down in the trial of Karen Reed. It's only been 2 weeks, right? Is that what we're on?
That was the first. Yeah, that was the third full week.
Okay.
So like the first, remember we, I don't think we went on Monday. It started on Tuesday.
Yeah.
That wasn't a full week. And so we've had 2 full weeks in the 4 days.
Yeah, it's kind of. It's been feeling like months.
No question, dude.
God, I know you're covering it live every day. It's been a lot. I'm just going to throw it to you. And since we last talked, how do you think it's going thus far for both sides? Let's start for the defense of Karen Reed.
For the defense, you know, I think in terms of the if I'm sticking to this week, I feel like, you know, Yuri Bukenik or Bukenik, however you want to pronounce it, is, I mean, it was clearly the position of Hank Brennan that he was going to be put on the stand to take the bullets for the whole team.
Yeah.
It seems pretty clear to me that they're not going to be calling Proctor in their case in chief. I'd be surprised if they did at this point, because I mean, he's just had Bukenik up there taking all the heat for all the cops.
Yeah.
And I thought in terms of like an evaluation, I think that Jackson's been very efficient. I think he's been even keeled. He hasn't been, you know, trying to be overly dramatic, you know, because there's a lot of points to be scored for the defense with regards to the investigation, man. I mean, no matter what you think about the case overall, I mean, if you're looking at it honestly and you're walking away from the trial thinking that was a good police investigation, you're fooling yourself, because it just wasn't. You know, it's like, I've got enough cop friends and cop colleagues in the YouTubes, and I have yet to meet one cop that's been like, that was a great, great investigation. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how it should be done. So in terms of Jackson's ability to be able to get these finer points out, I think he's done a really good job at it. You know, the thing about that is that you have to wonder, you know, are they going to be able in summation to tie that up so that it makes sense for them? Because really what they're doing through all of Bukenik, or how do you say, you go Bukenik or do you go Bukenik?
Bukenik is what I've been saying.
Yeah. I've been floating between the two, you know, but they need to be able to make sure that the jury understands the significance of what they're trying to do. And really the entire thing has been revolving around the Bowden defenses, which is where, as a defense team or a defense lawyer, you're attacking the investigation mm-hmm. by law enforcement. So, and that's where this thing lives. And for the defense, in order for them to be able to get into their third party culprit stuff during their case in chief, they have to be able to establish through Bowden that there's a nexus between the people in that house and the crime. And yeah. if Canone feels like they've done that sufficiently during the defense's case in chief, they'll be able to get into it. If she doesn't, they won't. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, really, that's what they've had to focus on. In terms of strategy, I think the defense has been way more tailored than they were in the first trial, which you'd expect from both sides. Mm-hmm. You expect a more tailored prosecution as well as a defense. And when you got a second bite at the apple, because, you know, you can look at everything that was done the first time. You can watch, you know, they've got the ability these days. It's not like the old days. They go on YouTube and watch the whole damn trial.
Yeah.
You know, they can watch the demeanor of every witness. They can watch every single cross, every single direct, you know, so you would expect them to come into this thing, both sides raring to go and having tightened the belts and gotten rid of the fat and just said, all right, this is what we're going to do. And when you talk about Brennan, I mean, he's trimmed a ton of fat mm-hmm. from that case. You know, yeah. he's trying a vastly different case than Lally is. So, yeah. you know, I mean, yesterday it was obviously fascinating with, you know, with Yuri reading all the text messages between Higgins and Karen, you know, and it's like, you're sitting there, you're kind of wondering, like I saw your clip on it, your take on it. I have a different take on it, but I think that it's a fair take that you had, you mm-hmm. know, in terms of what kind of in your mind you think that means in terms of those words and what Karen's motivation might have been.
Yeah, it doesn't make her a killer in what I was talking about with, because I was talking about narcissistic type personalities and what she's talking about with John. But again, it goes to the pattern is what I was trying to point out. And that clip is on Twitter and whatnot, or X.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, from my perspective, it's like, I think ultimately the import of that for the defense is to really show, and I believe that it does show, that clearly she didn't have any intent on killing John if the relationship was ending.
Yeah.
Meaning she, whether it be Brian Higgins or whoever it's going to be, she had options. She, mm-hmm. she could clearly get another dude if she, you know, so I think that ultimately the purpose of the defense really trying to put that all in is to show, okay, well, we're going to get rid of the second degree murder in terms of her having this kind of like burning desire to end John's life or some kind of revenge theme. And I think that that served the purposes. The thing that you have to wonder, and I was wondering aloud during my live, I'm like, if it's a close case in deliberations, if the jury is sitting on the fence, and, you know, I've just seen it too many times in trials that I've tried myself, where I've had defendants that I've had to put on the stand against my mm-hmm. my will, but yeah. it was necessary. And, you know, if it's close and they have a dislike for the defendant, mm-hmm. I mean, that, because we're dealing with human beings as jurors, can play against you. I mean, yeah. that's just facts. And when you combine the clips, you know, where just they're just not putting her in a good light, and you combine it with the fact, if you've got, you know, a juror or two that is a person who's been scorned in a relationship, mm-hmm. and that makes them feel a certain way. I mean, you have to worry about that if you're being honest about it. I mean, sure. you have to think about that. And, you know, the defense, I'm sure, talked about it ad nauseum. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't they were shooting from the hip. I'm sure all the lawyers in that room had many discussions about the potential pitfalls and the potential positive aspects that getting that stuff in, and they weighed it and they decided that they were going to, you know, go full Monty on that thing and just have the whole conversation laid out there, which took hours to listen to it all. So, I mean, ultimately, you know, I mean, how it's going to end up playing out is yet to be determined. And it's those 12 people in that box are the only, none of us out here matter.
None of us.
You know, it's only those 12 people in the box that matter in terms of how they're going to take it.
True. With all of the clips that have been played, and there's still, I'm sure, more to come. At this point, it really looks stronger to me than ever before that Karen Reed had knowledge that John was injured. Whether she wants to admit she hit him or not, I don't know. I mean, she even told her dad that she thought she hit something. So there's a lot of things out here that show Karen hit somebody. Now, I completely agree. Not intentional. But drunk, angry, whatever the hell it was, she hit him. I'm not doubting that anymore. Just because she said it herself so many times in so many different ways. And is she only, she's the only one who had knowledge of where he was. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. How are you on that? Are you feeling like, okay, this woman clearly has consciousness of guilt at this point. I mean, every which way you turn it, this is not how someone who doesn't know anything acts. It just seems so clear to me that she hit him. Again, not intentional, but she hit him. And what is so sickening about this whole damn thing is that she has that knowledge, and it has caused this chaos to all these other people's lives rather than owning this was a horrible accident. I don't think a jury is looking at this in any other direction at this point. I mean, shitty police work, yeah. I understood more of it with the weather, the way that they described it this week, though, too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously on the opposite side of that.
Yeah.
You know, and my thing is, I just follow the science on the case, man. Like, I've been trying cases for too long to know that, you know, what people say in high pressure, high trauma situations just.
But it's not high pressure. At the moment, I get the insanity. I get, you know, in the moments that she's freaking out. But we're talking months and months and months and months and interview. And her story changes every time.
Yeah, I think that the takeaway from that is that it's the opposite of what you're saying. I think what that means is she has no idea.
Well, you know what I mean? I think that could be very well true. I mean, I don't know that what she's saying is ever accurate either. I've said that too. I said much of what she says, she has this story, she has that story, they're all changing. What is the real one? I don't know that any of them are the real one with what she's saying. I think it's a guess. I don't think it's a wild guess. I think it's a guess based on what she knew, what the situation was, and put the pieces together and said, okay, this, but she can't have it both ways. She can't be saying, this is where I left him on the left side of the yard, where she clearly talks about the yard being a postage stamp. And this is where she last saw him, was over there, not on the right side, on the left side. But then she still is hanging her hat in court the other day, walking out. I saw him get in the house. Well, what is it, Karen? Because you've said every other thing too. So,
yeah, I mean, what is it? But those are going to be her cross to bear, you know, if and when she takes a stand, you know, again, as a defense attorney in this case in particular, you know, I would be dreading the concept of having to put her on the stand. But I mean, the fact of the matter is that you've got a situation wherein, you know, talking about you can't have it both ways. You can't have it where, you know, you're lining her up as being heavily intoxicated by showing hours of, you know, P.F. McCarthy's in the waterfall and going through drink by drink, and her, this is her pouring it into the drink. She's got, you know, counting her drinks. She's
and lying about thin. That, lying about giving 20 stories on that too. I mean, everything is 20 different stories for her. Every element of this, like, is a different story.
It's easy to sit here on the sidelines because you and I haven't been arrested, you know, after a night of heavy drinking and trying to put the pieces together with your life on the line, like after the fact. You know, it's like I just think that the reality is that she has no idea what happened that night. And I think that once she hired on some lawyers that started digging into the discovery and namely, again, the science, man. I mean, like, I don't give a shit what she said. Like, I care whether
we're seeing here that shows that he was beat up in a house.
I mean, I you know, that's not my thing.
Yeah.
Whether or not that happened, I have no fucking clue.
Sure.
All I can do, frankly, is look at what the science shows mm-hmm. with respect to whether or not there was a motor vehicle pedestrian strike. And the rest of it is all outside noise to me. I get why, you know, people hang their hats. I mean, you see it in every single case, you know, when they start looking at your life under the microscope. And if you're like Karen and you make bad moves and you start talking to all kinds of people and you're telling all kinds of different stories because you don't know what the fuck happened. And then they bring those back to you. Mm-hmm. It's not a good look. But no. At the end of the day, the only thing that we have to really hang our hat on as to whether or not there was a motor vehicle strike is the science and the evidence. Mm-hmm. So, you know, look, I mean, we're going to hear Welcher from the Commonwealth. I'm going to see what that guy has to say.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to, you know, but understanding he's a hired gun. Like sure. there's no two ways around it. And if you follow trials, you understand that both sides mm-hmm. have hired guns. If you're the government and you're using a government employee, that is a hired gun. If they're doing what they did here and they hired somebody from the outside, he's a hired gun. Mm-hmm. You think they're going to put on a guy who's going to come up with some kind of opinion that doesn't help the Commonwealth? Of course not.
Sure.
So that's the importance of the ARCA guys.
Yeah.
But that's the difference for me, because you have two guys, and I don't give a shit what Hank Brennan's saying. The report was done prior mm-hmm. to anybody in either side of this case having any idea that they were doing it.
Sure.
And they came up with what their evaluation was mm-hmm. and their opinion based on their testing. And that's what I trust is just a objective observer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like that to me, that's the best evidence. I'm not going to ever hang my hat on some woman who, you know, probably has little to no memory of what happened that night and say, okay, well, she said, She threw every possibility out there. I mean, like I've just dealt with people that are in that kind of a situation where they're just saying all kinds of shit. They're throwing every possibility out there. I mean, like, and we've had this conversation multiple times, man. I mean, like, if you're telling me that if you dropped your girlfriend off one night and, you know, she was like, and you were kind of irritated by the fact that she decided to stay and go party with a bunch of people in the house when you think that she should have just come home, and like you fucking leave and you end up finding her dead on that yard the next day. I mean, and you were unfortunate enough to be drinking and driving and really had kind of browned out or blacked out,
yeah,
depending on what booze you're drinking, and you really don't have a recollection of it. I mean, if you're being honest, every possibility is going to be coming out of your mouth, because mm-hmm. If she had known, my counter to you in terms of her saying all the things, if she had known at the time that she was saying all these things, why in the world would she be saying either I hit him or did I hit him? That's illogical. It's illogical. It's not bright, but and she's not a stupid person is the point. And she's not drunk at that point, you know, so I mean, you guys can't on the guilt side, can't have it both ways either. You can't have that she's hysterical and that she's also so conniving and nefarious that she's plotting these late night calls in order to you know, kind of give herself an alibi. You know what I mean? It's like those two things.
I don't think she's plot. I think it's just how she lives her life. Honestly, I just think she's a manipulative person. I think this is just how she lives her life. And she can't be held accountable for anything. I think if we had the opportunity to talk to other people who knew her in her past, and this is just my own conjecture, has nothing to do with John O'Keefe, I think we'd see a similar story on mundane pieces of life of someone who has a big issue with being accountable for anything.
I mean, you say that,
but we have examples too. Like the way that she was talking to John, the little bits that we have seen in our outside life keep pointing to that as well. The behavior itself. I don't think she's sitting there plotting like most people would have to. Like you'd have to like figure this out. I just think it's a constant spin of in her mind. What are people going to think of me? What is my image out there? What is challenging that image? That's a big challenge of you just hit the guy that everybody loves, the guy who's a saint who took in his niece and nephew and all this, and you just hit him? Shit. How is that going to affect me? And it's a sick way of thinking, but there's a lot of people that think that way. And it's very narcissistic. I'm not saying she is. I'm just saying it's a trait. And that's how people like that function. And she clearly continues to function that way. That's why the stories are always changing, because whatever at the moment sounds like it's going to be the best, they are very tone deaf to how the rest of the room is reading them. And they rely on people to just believe them. And I think she's done that most of her life and gotten away with it. And this is another time where she thinks she's going to get away with it. But everybody's looking at it with a microscope and the scrutiny's on her. And she just contradicts herself left and right. So how is a jury going to believe anything of her story of that she's sure she didn't hit him when she's not sure of anything at all? I mean, the story keeps changing to every aspect of this. So to take Karen at her word of I didn't hit him when she already said 50 different ways that maybe he got hit by a snowplow. Maybe he's dead in the road. This is exactly where I left him. This is he got in the house. He didn't go in the house. Just where is a jury going to look at this and go, yeah, there's reason.
You know
she seems like a compulsory liar is what she seems like.
They're going to look at they're going to look at the science, dude.
Yeah.
This is like,
but they're human.
If you're the commonwealth,
I hear you, they're human. And that's the problem with it. Karen talked. If Karen didn't give all these interviews, I agree. I think the science would hold a lot more to it. But
all I could tell you is when your strongest evidence is clips of her talking, you don't want to live in that country, bro.
Well, admitting to the crime?
I'm just telling you. And
that's the thing. It's
like then we're 3 years into kind of your whole opining on her narcissism and she's just that kind of person. Like we're 3 years in to this case. What are all the people that are like the people in her life? Her friends, people that know her,
where are they in general?
That's not my point. My point is this.
Yeah.
In every single case where you have super high profile things, you know, every mainstream media, every blogger, every single person that's covering that case, no matter what media outlet you're working for, are trying to dig up people to get dirt on defendants. And I haven't heard anything in 3 years to anything that you've said about her being that type of a person.
And I'm basing it on how she has demonstrated herself over and over is how I'm basing it. I'm saying I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that outside of this, but in her own words is where I'm getting this.
I mean, it's easy to sit here on the sidelines, man, and say, oh yeah, this is the way she's acting and she's coming off like this. She's coming out like, you know, when you're fighting for your life, Tony, and make no bones about it, my friend, that's exactly what the fuck she's doing. And it has been for 3 years.
I get it.
You know, it's easy to sit here on the sidelines and poke and prod and say, oh, this, but when you're fighting for your life, you know, it's a different circumstance. And unless you're in it, in that circumstance, you have no idea how you'd respond in that particular circumstance. I mean, fortunately, you and I have never had to be in that position. Sure. And, you know, when you compound that with the fact that this case has taken on a life of its own, you know, I mean, look, dude, here's where this thing lays with me.
Yeah.
I'm going to let the science prove it. Like that's either the Commonwealth is going to be able to prove their case through the science or they're not. And based on what I've seen and based on what I've heard through the first trial, I know that there's not anything that's factually different. You know, and you can't just dismiss that police investigation. I'm sorry, but you can't.
Sure.
No, it's like, you know, you're saying, well, there's no proof that they are. It's because they didn't fucking investigate.
Well,
it,
I agree with that completely.
It's like, of course they don't have any proof. That was the entire
point.
They didn't
do it. Yeah.
You don't know that. You cannot say that definitively. You know, when you could have done that, proper investigation.
I'm agreeing
with you. Nobody in the house did anything.
No, I'm agreeing that it wasn't a good investigation. I'm not saying it was a good investigation. I'm completely agreeing. But with that, where we have clearly Proctor is the, you know, the bad thing in the room that's going to be brought out very soon. the way that it was presented this week, I understood more about the solo cups. I know it was all presented in the last trial too. Maybe I just wasn't paying enough attention to or wasn't as in depth to this as I am this time. But I kind of understood it. It was more like either we get this now or we don't. And not perfect. I get it. Not ideal by any stretch of the imagination. But again, some of these pieces of evidence that we're talking about here too, like his clotted blood that's in the scene that they're getting in solo cups, none of it really shows. I mean, it doesn't really do anything to the case. It's his blood. I don't really know where else they would go with that, but I understand too why they did it the way they did. It was, you had no other options at that exact second in time. Eventually, when they did get evidence bags, they used evidence bags. But when the weather's coming down the way it was, you know what that's like too. We've both lived in very snowy environments. 10 minutes, you walk away, that crime scene's going to be gone. I mean, it's just going to be covered in snow. So I understand some of that, but yes, the shadiness of all of the things in this, throwing the phones away, all of that, and we're going to hear all about it. You don't know, I don't know. What was the reason for some of these really weird, shady actions? Is it covering up this, or is it just covering up whatever the hell's on their phone, which is probably a cornucopia of stuff from this case, other cases, life in general, and I don't know. But again, even if you look at those pieces, it doesn't, and I know you're not on the side of the house party being the, you know, the culprit here where everybody beat him up, but I don't know how they're going to run with that any further because it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, let's be clear. I'm on the side of, I don't think in terms of trying to get a not guilty in this case that they need to be leaning into that.
Yeah.
I have no idea what happened that night.
Sure.
I'm certainly not dismissing that John O'Keefe went to that house. I don't know. I mm-hmm. wasn't there and I'm not going to presume to know.
Like you can find her innocent without believing the story.
That's what I'm saying. Well, like we've talked about it the last 3 weeks. Yeah. I mean, to me, you win this case on the science.
Mm-hmm.
Things that can be proven, like the defense has absolutely no obligation to prove a goddamn thing. And, you know, when they create this situation where they make that promise to the jury and they talk about the folks inside of the house and if they decide to lean into it, as opposed to just saying, okay, well, we've shown you a lot of really weird behavior mm-hmm. from these folks that were in that house. You know, if you're looking for another place to hang your hat, if you don't think that this could have been maybe a slip and fall and he cracked his head open and you need some place to hang your hat, I'm just going to suggest to you, jury, that maybe you kind of take into account all of the really bizarre shit that the people in that house were doing afterwards. And then you have to combine that with the fact that law enforcement decided not to investigate that. The only time that became a thing for law enforcement is when the defense made a thing of it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the point where they start doing, I mean, they're doing interviews of fact witnesses, mm-hmm. eyewitnesses that were there, that saw the vehicle there 18 months after. I mean, like you have to have a problem with that. Forget about the solo cups. The solo cups in and of themselves, okay, can you maybe say, yeah, it was dire. Even though I think the police station was probably as close as to wherever he went to get the solo cups or the leaf, like all the things, there was an answer. We're talking about Boston.
No, the leaf blower came from the police department.
It came from a dude's house, one of the cops' houses. He went to his house and grabbed it. But
is that where it was? So, okay.
Yeah.
I thought they testified this week that the cups came from the house and the leaf blower came from the station, but I could be wrong.
No, I think that I forget who he sent.
Okay.
To go
doesn't matter.
The leaf blower from yeah, I mean, yeah. So, but I like it's, you have to look at the totality of the investigation. Like if you start trying to make excuses for any of the one things that took place, you know, and you start with like any cop that's worth their salt. And again, don't take my word for it. Talk mm-hmm. to every cop that you know, every cop yeah. that you interview for there not to have been just the ask for a consent search of that house. Hey, you know, you mind if I just take a peek, poke around, check out the bait. Just that asking for a consent search with that not happening should send up a red flag for you, because it's just not how cops normally operate. Mm-hmm. This concept that they're taking the word of witnesses.
Yeah.
What case have you ever fucking heard of cops taking the word of what people are saying? That's not what their job is.
When there are other cops. It's when you see that happening. And I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying that's why.
Because even
if they did do a search of the house, and this is just a conjecture, but even if they did do a search of the house and they found nothing, I don't think it would satisfy anyone, because it's the cops investigating the cops. So I don't know where that would have even have gone. I mean, should they have? Without a doubt, I completely agree.
It would
agree.
Have been way more satisfactory to people had they done
just
it than
to have
had
it.
They not.
Yes, I agree. I completely agree.
You know, I mean, if you're like, we went in, I asked for a consent search, he turned me down, you know, and then you're making the argument that we don't think we had enough for probable cause to go get a warrant. And, you know, like, I would argue that in the opposite. I believe that they did. I believe that the fact that he was out there without a jacket, without a shoe, on a lawn in a house that he was supposed to be destined to go into, I think it would warrant a search warrant. I don't think, you know, probable cause is not beyond a reasonable doubt. And, you know, this whole bullshit that Gallagher was puking up out there, like, oh, I could get in real trouble if I go in and like, you're trying to go get a warrant, bro. I'm not telling you to make up any shit. You just look at the facts at what they were at that time, what you knew at the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but again, like, you're talking about Boston Cops House, man. Yeah. It's like,
I agree. One thing that has always got me on this case, and it doesn't make any sense to me, is them not coming out of the house, of the family not coming out of the house while this is all going on in their front yard. I mean, he's a cop. Why didn't he come out just to, I don't know, it's in your front yard. I mean, anything going on, I think I'd be going out there.
100%.
I mean, why stay? Was it just stupidity? What, again, that doesn't show that he murdered anyone either. But why would you stay? That just,
I don't know.
That one is weird.
You want to talk about consciousness of guilt type shit. I mean, you can make the same argument there. Like, that's just a really weird thing, because
except he hasn't run around and said, I killed him 52 different ways.
Because they didn't ask him.
No, but
he wasn't the one arrested for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He wasn't the one blackout drunk driving and leaving. So, you know what I mean? It's like different circumstances. But, you know, like, you have to, again, you just have to, if you're the defense, you just point at those things and say, look, I'm not for nothing here, but I'm just saying, when you look at the totality of the circumstances with the individuals that were in that home, and you listen to a very credible witness like Heather Maxson, who's sitting there and saying, we drove by. I mean, she was incredibly likable. She was incredibly credible as a witness. And, you know, I mean, when she say we drove by, I saw Karen in there. I didn't see John. Mm-hmm. I didn't see him on the outside of the vehicle. Take that for what you will. John's 6'1", you know, I mean, he's going to be taller in the car. Like, I mean, like, this is before she pulled away. Right. So where is John at that point? So, I mean, you've got these facts that are real problems for the Commonwealth. And, you know, again, I mean, the strength of their case is they're using these clips of Karen just blathering on and saying all kinds of shit that just don't match with one another. And it's a problem for them. You know, I mean, if you're sitting there as the defense, like anybody that you would ask would be like, that was a huge mistake to allow her to talk to seven different outlets and give different stories to all. You know, like, it's like, for me, I don't see it as a woman who's narcissistic and trying to, it's like a woman reaching for an answer. But then the thing that you have to kind of take into consideration is that she is extremely involved in her defense. Now, I've been defending people for a long time, Tony, and I've never had a client. I've had clients that are very involved with their defense in terms of like, I'd really like to kind of take a look at the discovery. She's involved on like a paralegal level in terms of knowing the evidence backwards and forwards. I mean, you have a strange circumstance wherein if you have somebody who didn't necessarily know what happened because of their alcohol consumption that night, and her mind's going everywhere, and then they start getting the discovery, and then you have some qualified defense attorneys kind of looking through it, and they're saying, Karen, I'm going to tell you definitively, the science is not pointing to the fact that you hit him. Mm-hmm. You know, at that point, you're going to take that as, all right, I mean, I'm gonna rely on the science if you're a human being. And again, remember, you have to pretend like your life's on the line because her life is on the line.
Sure.
Like just like we're talking, her life is over if she gets convicted on this thing. Like everything that she's ever known. And you know, I mean, it's a really, really tough case, man. And it's got heated people on both sides of it. I love that you and I can both not necessarily be in agreement on things and just have, we're an example to the world that we can disagree about certain facts and have a very nice, civil, interesting conversation.
Yeah.
Because I mean, everybody should strive to be able to do that.
I
know what I'm saying?
Well, it's how you learn. It's how you go, oh, I didn't think of it that way. And 100%. You may at the end of the day, agree, disagree. It doesn't matter, but you go, oh, okay. That's how you learn.
And I mean, the other thing I'd say to you, T, is like by the time, like if you're not feeling at the end of the Commonwealth's case that they've proved it up, they're in deep shit. You know what I mean?
I feel like they have.
You know what I'm saying? In any trial you're watching, you want to walk through the Commonwealth's case or the state's case, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that case in chief, you should be feeling like, all right, I think they got her, you know, before the defense comes on. So, I mean, like in terms of kind of where your head's at with this thing, I mean, I'm sure Hank Brennan would be happy to know that you're feeling like, all right, you know, I'm making some headway with the general public out there. You know, some folks are coming our way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, obviously, like, I'm just going to tell you, just wait for all the evidence.
Oh, yeah. We have yet to see the defense take their turn, and that's going to be very interesting to see. I think we're going to have a very different mood in that courtroom once both sides have gone. And I think there'll be more question. Right now, they got her against a wall, but the defense still has to go. I feel like Alan Jackson, I feel like he's not in step with this the way he was last time. I don't understand why he kept pushing some of these witnesses in the way that he did, getting them to like literally repeat over and over that she said she hit him. I'm like, make it stop. Like if that's the witness you're talking, like you don't want them to keep saying it over and over and over. I felt like they gave like Jen McCabe a second, like, okay, do it again, do the encore.
or do you?
Because I don't know. Give me that perspective. Like what?
Look at the flip side of it.
Yeah.
I mean, if your position's going to be like, all right, if she's going to say it over and over and over, here's where we're at as a defense. We have science behind us. I don't give a shit what Jen McCabe's saying that she said that Karen said that morning, because you have problems with, you've got Nuttall and McCabe are the two people who said it, yet none of the cops heard it. None of the cops have it in their reports. But bigger than that is the science. The science just doesn't prove up the fact that she hit him. It doesn't fucking matter what Karen Reed says. Yeah. Like at some point, if you're the defense, there's no point in trying to turtle away from it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like, you can't, they're like, sometimes you just got to take the bullet and you've got to try to say, okay, you know, it is what it is. Yeah. Like Jen McCabe's claiming this. We're trying to show that she may have had reasons to not be truthful about what she's claiming that Karen said, mm-hmm. you know, and
but
at
she
the
came
end of the day, we're going to rely
yeah.
on these two guys that were hired by the Department of yeah. Justice, that were truly independent, that weren't mm-hmm. the hired gun, that are going to come in and testify that they're going, you know, the way that they're going to testify. And it's going to be exactly as to what they testified the first trial, that everything that they've seen between the injuries and the vehicle are inconsistent with a motor vehicle pedestrian strike. And I mean, that's the best evidence in the case. That's what I keep saying. Like everything else is bullshit.
Yeah.
Everything else doesn't fucking matter. You have to look at the things that matter. So then the problem for the defense is, how do you explain the taillight? And I mean, and it's a problem for the prosecution too, because if you're telling me, if it's Hank's position that John got clipped, which is what he said in the opening, how are you explaining a exploding taillight that's got taillight strewn all over the yard? Like, I mean, it's just, mm-hmm. we're talking 46, whatever, 46, 47, yeah. 8, what, like however many pieces it is. That's a problem for the prosecution as well. Like the taillight is not some kind of definitive evidence. It's a real issue for both sides. Mm-hmm. The problem for the Commonwealth is that the guy that they have at the center of it all is Michael Proctor.
Yes.
And you know, he is just the gift that keeps on giving for the defense, and he is the nightmare for the Commonwealth. Yeah. And the same way that you had every one of those defense attorneys talking and sitting down about how to handle certain issues in a case, like every good attorney does heading into a trial, you know what your warts are in your case. You know what your big issues are. Mm-hmm. You know the things that you have to deal with. And believe me, you know, Morrissey, Lally, and Brennan, and McLaughlin were all in a room talking ad nauseum about how they're going to deal with the Michael Proctor problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Yuri Bukinek was the guy they decided to take the bullet.
Yeah.
And they're going to put him on the stand. And, you know, I think what we're going to see is that the defense is going to call Michael Proctor. And, you know, I mean, Brennan can use that to his advantage, because in that circumstance, he'll get to cross him, mm-hmm. where he'll get to ask leading questions. You know, I'm not calling it something like people are like, it's a stroke of genius. I'm like, no, it's not. The guy just couldn't call him during his case in chief, because he's a giant flaming piece of shit, mm-hmm. and he's a huge problem for the Commonwealth that can just submarine their case.
Yeah.
Because now the other people that have had another trial to prepare for Michael Proctor have used that time accordingly, and you can be rest assured they're going to be coming at him as hard, if not harder. So you just don't call him. You force him to get called by the defense. They're obviously going to try to treat him as an adverse witness, which means that they'll be able to cross-examine him as well. But from Hank Brennan's perspective, that allows him to cross-examine, which allows you to control the witness in a much, much better way than you can during a direct exam. So that'll be really interesting. You know what I mean? And that Michael Proctor factor, if it is a defense that calls him, we talked about this, I think, last week too. Like, where's his head at? You know, like where's that guy at? Like, he has been made the fall guy. He lost his career. Granted, he was a piece of shit. You know, I mean, these cops, I'm sure, like, if you were to dig through every cop's text about any case that's going on, they're texting other cops in their department, and they're part of the investigation. I'm sure that you're going to be seeing very similar text messages.
Sure, like, I agree.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, excuses to Proctor. But you just don't expect as a cop that shit's ever going to be made public.
And here's what I'm wondering about Proctor this round is they've very successfully painted Karen Reed, the prosecution has, as a very unlikable character, to put it lightly. Proctor clearly didn't like her. I'm not saying he conspired to do anything, you know, with the whole we're going to get her shit. I think that's more like he knows what a shitty person Karen Reed is via his buddies, via the cops, because John O'Keefe was probably getting ready to break up with her, it sounds like, and even attested to that to his friends. And I'm sure stories have come out amongst those friends about what life is like with Karen Reed. So when they find out that Karen supposedly is the one who hit him, that she's going down. Like, the hell that she put him through, and then this happens. I don't excuse any of his behavior, the way that he talked about women or anything like that. I think I agree, he's a piece of shit. But I think he's going to be understood better this round, because if people are already not liking Karen Reed for the various reasons that they may, and they're hearing the cop going and being very derogatory about her, also not liking her, I think you're going to have some people in that jury box going, I get it. I get why he doesn't like her. Doesn't
not
excuse his behavior.
Like, where is Proctor getting any information about Karen and John's relationship?
I'm saying
he had formed an opinion 16
I'm saying
hours
talking
into this
with fellow cops behind the scenes about
how the fuck would they know?
Because
you know what I mean? Like,
they
don't know
John.
What Karen and John's relationship was. Like,
but
these
people are friends, they're buddies. So yeah, I'm sure John talked to people about his relationship.
By all accounts, everybody liked Karen. Like, that,
they
like
did,
that,
but
like,
there,
none
but
of that
people
tracks.
Did
it's
know
like,
that he was getting ready to break up too.
Like, people don't fucking know. It's like saying, like, your friends that you hang out with, like, know what goes on in between the walls of your home. They have no fucking idea what's going on in your relationship. You know what I mean? It's like anybody saying like you know.
Others have attested to this that they knew that they wasn't happy.
But what I'm trying to tell you, man, is like, you know, everybody puts on appearances when they go out. No
well,
one
sure.
knows what's going on in a personal relationship. I mean, we saw the text messages. That wasn't like just John breaking up with Karen. Karen was giving just as much. She's like, you know, I think the kids are a real impediment to our relationship. I mean, like, I'm just reading it completely different than you. Like, this wasn't like, John, I can't stand this fucking bitch. I can't wait to dump her. This was like two people that had a relationship that had some duration. And I think we're like realizing this probably doesn't have legs. I was not getting any sense that Karen Reed was like cowering. I mean, she's a very successful woman. Mm-hmm. She's educated. She had a really well-paying job. She's done very well for herself. She's an independent woman. Casting her as some kind of succubus who like needed John O'Keefe, you know, for her life to be complete is fucking ridiculous.
I don't think she did. I'm not saying that she did.
But you're kind of insinuating it. And it's like the reality of the situation. If you look at the text, the last text between John and Karen, I'm not getting any sense of what you're saying, that like John was getting ready to dump her and she was all bitter and angry. I mean, it's like,
I'm not saying she was bitter and angry.
The words don't belie that.
That's not what I'm saying, though. I'm saying
it. You just said that Proctor was hearing shit from other cops that this relationship was on the rocks and that Karen was a fucking nightmare to deal with.
It seems like they did have an opinion about her.
Proctor did.
Yeah.
Based on nothing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Based on what? Right? I mean, is he just randomly calling her a bitch? I mean, or is there something behind it where he seems to have some animosity? Because there has been other people who have said John had been talking about breaking up with her. And
that's a shit. Like, those people don't know a guy. I mean, you saw the actual text messages between John and Karen. Mm-hmm. If you use that as your best judgment. That annoying text stream that we all had to sit through, where it seemed like you had like two 17-year-olds instead of just coming out and saying shit.
I'm not saying any of this says that she was angry and tried to kill him on purpose.
But what I'm saying is your best evidence of what the state of that relationship was at that moment in time are those text messages. As juvenile as we all may think that they may have been, the fact of the matter is that if you parse it for some real information, you saw that Karen was like, look, you know, we had a blowout this morning. You know, I want to try to work past it. We clearly have some issues in our relationships. And, you know, clearly you don't like the way that I handle the kids. And I don't like the fact that you are hammering me for the way that I handle the kids, because I like to spoil them a little bit. And you're a little sterner with your parenting. I didn't necessarily sign up for a relationship where there were going to be two kids injected immediately. You know, you could see all that shit taking place. You know, I mean, Karen has dated, I'm sure, many, many men in her life. And, you know, like, she wasn't so hung up on John that anything that the Commonwealth would try to impute on her in terms of her having some kind of like revenge in her heart just has fallen on deaf ears with me.
I don't feel like it was revenge in her heart. As far as
Proctor goes, fuck that guy. That guy, like he knew nothing. He formed an opinion on the case and that's where he went. He's calling her a fucking bitch. That bitch is going down. Whatever, all the nasty shit that he was saying, because it's called tunnel vision, T.
Yeah.
Like, it's a simple thing. Like, he had decided that she hit him. And whether that was based on, I don't know where he got that. Like, he's looking at, all right, well, there's some taillight here. Or, you know, maybe somebody did talk to him. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I wasn't there. That's what I'm saying. Like, that part of the puzzle, you got to try to piece shit together in terms of, like, why did all these people act so fucking bizarrely? Like, in that house. I mean, If it was you, Tony, and it was your house, you know, just to make sure that you cleared your name and you didn't get like somebody like fucking talking shit and like all kinds of theories being thrown about in this little small town of 25,000 people about what may or may not have gone on in your house, I would have been like, you know what? Come the fuck in. Yeah. Look all around, dude. Like, look, this dude was not in my house.
Yeah.
Like he never came into my house. Come in, scour it. I don't give a shit. I'm going to go hide my weed bag in my safe. But, you know, other than that, you guys have at it. It's like none of that shit happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like even the simple question of, hey, can we do a consent search? Can we just take a peek around the house? You know, and it's like that concept of Albert not coming out like you said. I don't know how you take that. If I looked out my window and saw,
I'd be running outside.
Ambulance, three cops out, like walking around on my front yard. I'd be, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. I don't, you know, that doesn't make any sense to me. It
doesn't make any sense.
No.
I don't know.
No.
So, you know, like I could probably get you swaying one way or another. All I'm suggesting to you is live in the land of the science, brother, because that's where this case, that it's our best evidence. It's going to be the best way for us who will never, none of us will ever know.
What really about happened. And we haven't seen this yet, and we don't know if we will. But we do know that there is going to be more vehicle data coming out. What if that vehicle data shows a strike?
I mean,
that's the science right there.
If the vehicle data shows a strike, then that's pretty fucking definitive evidence.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that's in existence, that would have been my first witness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause that would have been, you know, I'm about to flamethrow this case right now for the jury. And I'm about to put out the strongest piece of evidence that we have. Mm-hmm. And it's going to tell you that the data from the black box said that there was a vehicle strike at this time. Mm-hmm. I mean, why are you waiting? Like
I don't know.
Like the concept that, you know, you're trying to build a case. If you have evidence like that, I would consider that to be smoking gun evidence. You're coming out of the box with a haymaker,
yeah,
and knocking the defendant right the fuck out in the first round, because anything the defense does after that's going to be falling on deaf ears, because you know what? They just told us that the vehicle data said that there was a vehicle strike at this time. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I haven't heard there was any vehicle data like that. I highly doubt it, but
It's beyond the OnStar data that is coming. So it's more in tune with the actual vehicle itself, not just the OnStar.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, it's like Murdoch type shit.
Yeah, I mean, is what will it say? I have no idea.
I'm
wondering if we're going to see something like that is more definitive into that direction. Again, that's just speculation.
I mean, we talked about that a lot during trial one, yeah, especially with respect to, you know, this concept, like, why aren't they coming up with like exactly that type of data?
Yeah.
And I think kind of a general consensus that I was getting from the public on my Twitter was that you typically get that kind of data at lower speeds, like where you're getting like on my Audi, if I'm backing up slowly,
yeah,
like I get those alerts, and then mm-hmm. it's got also the auto brake, you know, like yeah, where it just crams on my brakes mm-hmm. against my will, and it's horrifying. It feels like I hit something,
yeah,
when it employs my brakes for me, but at higher speeds, you don't get that kind of reading, like for yeah, whatever reason.
And I'm wondering,
I
don't know.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, we'll see what there is. I have to believe if they had some kind of smoking gun evidence like that would have come out right away, you know,
yeah,
and then you end it with Welcher. You start it with that, and then you end it with Welcher and say, okay, yeah, like I'm going to prove up what the car is telling us happened mm-hmm. by throwing some more science at it. So, from what I hear, Commonwealth is near done with their case.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they've got a long way to go to prove Karen Reed did anything, because like right now, all they're leaning on are the clips
of Karen Reed saying that she did
of Karen Reed saying all kinds of shit. So
yeah,
we'll see how it lands, man.
Yeah. It's the science versus Karen Reed, actually.
Yeah.
And it's quite a matchup there. It's science against Karen's own words. Yep. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the jury feels about this at the end of all of it.
It's all that matters.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
4th of July deals are on at Lowe's. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances, including the Samsung Bespoke French Door Refrigerator, featuring Beverage Center and Dual Ice Maker. Plus, when you buy more, you save more. Now's the perfect time to upgrade your home with top Samsung appliances and hot 4th of July savings at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer.
Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong. The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong. The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong. The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong. The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.